So we're in Judges 19 and 20, and we talked last week about the trip that the Levite made to go and retrieve his concubine, and how they ended up back at Gibeah of Benjamin. And you'll excuse me just a minute, I left my glasses back here. I'd rather not commit heresy by misreading things. I'll take my lumps for forgetting my glasses, but that's okay. So they ended up at Gibeah of Benjamin, and the narrative is pretty much the same as it was in when the two angels visited Lot at Sodom. You know, the back and forth is almost the same. The men of the city surrounded the house and bring out the strangers because we want to abuse them. And he said, "No, my brethren." He's calling them brethren, and he says, "You can't do this because it's not right and proper according to the law." And they said, "We're going to basically beat your house down." It's kind of interesting. There's not only the repulsive behavior, morally it's reprehensible, but you think about the implications for property rights too. You can't do what you want in your own house. You know, we're going to invade your house and, you know, break your door down and do what we want. I mean, that was kind of the mob mentality there in Gibeah. But they said, you know, "We're going to break your house down." Well, then he brought the concubine, this woman that he supposedly loved so much and had gone down to get her back from her father's house. He pushed her out the door as kind of a peace offering. And so they took her and abused her all night. And in the morning, she stumbled back to the house and died right there at the threshold of the door. She died as a result of her, you know, the mistreatment that she had suffered. Verse 28 is where we left off last week. And he said unto her, "Up, let us be going." But none answered. I mean, it's a real loving response, isn't it? Get up, woman, it's time to go. There's a whole lot that's wrong here. But it's interesting to me how in chapter 17 and 18, you have the Levite that became a priest to the house of Micah, and then he became a priest to the whole tribe of Dan. The Levites are the ones that are supposed to know better, and they're involved in that ungodly behavior. And then here, you got another Levite that's in the midst of the next scenario, and I think it just, you know, fully illustrates the theme of the book of Judges, which is that there's no king in Israel. Every man did that which is right in his own eyes. But, you know, this is not the kind of behavior that he should have been, you know, demonstrating, whether, you know, it was with the concubine or whether it was with, you know, protecting himself by pushing her out to the wolves, basically. And in verse 28, it says, "None answered," middle of the verse. "Then the man took her up upon an ass, and the man rose up and gat him unto his place." Now, if I'm remembering the geography correctly from what I've read, from where they started at his father-in-law's house to where he lived was no more than, you know, day and a half's travel, walking or on a donkey. So he could have made it all the way home the second day. So he picked her up, threw her across the animal, and took her home. Verse 29, "When he was come into his house, he took a knife and laid hold on his concubine and divided her together with her bones into 12 pieces and sent her into all the coasts of Israel. And it was so that all that saw it said, there was no such deed done nor seen from the day that children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider of it, take advice and speak your mind." So I think this probably could fall into the category of repulsive behavior as well. But we'll call it a revolting call to action. How's that? Okay. But he took her home. Now, he's got some time to think while he's, you know, riding the donkey home or walking back home about everything that's happened. Now, obviously, she was abused. She's dead. But, you know, he was threatened. They threatened to kill him or abuse him. He wasn't even safe in a house, much less out in the street at night. I mean, you think about that, being caught in that kind of position in a place that was supposed to be, you know, a place of protection. I mean, he was an Israelite. This is a city of Israel. he specifically said, I don't want to stay in this house of the strangers at Jebus, later would be renamed Jerusalem. He said, I don't want to stay there because they're not Israelites. Let's go to an Israelite city. And then this happened to him. I mean, he was truly bothered, and he should have been. Was he without fault? Of course not. I mean, there was fault on both sides here. But then you have a revolting call to action. When he got home, he took her and cut her into 12 pieces with the bones. Now, I know this is horrible, but one of my thoughts was, man, what kind of knife was that? I mean, if any of you have ever tried to, butcher meat, whether it's to cut up a cow or a hog or a goat or something like that, or just to try to carve the turkey at Thanksgiving, I mean, you know, you got to have a decent knife to get that work done. But I don't know if it's a knife or a saw or whatever, but he cut her into 12 pieces. Now, can you think of any other instance in Israel where something like this was done, not with a person, maybe with an animal? You think of an instance, there's one recorded in 1 Samuel where something similar to this happened. No? No, all right, I know I sprung it on you too early in the morning. Very, very early on after Saul had been anointed king and they were attacked, Saul took oxen and Israel was attacked and he was calling everybody to help defend the area that had been attacked. Well, Saul took oxen and cut them up into pieces and he said, sent them all out and said, if you don't come help, we're going to do this to your oxen. Okay, now, he didn't say, we're going to do this to all your women. But so it's a little different scenario, but still there was a call to action here in this. He did it because you see the statement there at the end of verse 30, consider it, take advice, speak your mind. But he cut her up and sent her to all, it says, to all the coasts of Israel. Now, I'm not going to try to belabor the point too much, but I mean, she's been dead a day by the time he gets home, and then he does this. And if he's doing that, he's probably using messengers to send it out. I mean, this had to be a disgusting sight to look at. But I mean, you're talking about no preservation, no refrigeration. I mean, this is going to be a nasty message when it gets delivered. And, you know, it seems like from the statement at the end of verse 30 where he said, look, listen to this, think about it, you know, consider what you ought to do in response. It seems like he sent a message along with this, right? Hey, well, what is this? Well, this is a piece of a concubine. Why? What happened? Well, there was a Levite, and he was traveling, and he went to Gibeah of Benjamin, and they abused this poor woman all night and killed her. You know, should we let that happen in our country? That was basically the message, and it was delivered with the different messengers to all the tribes. It says to all the tribes here, excuse me. Well, actually, it says sent her into all the coasts of Israel. The 12 indicates the 12 tribes, typically. So it seems like Benjamin would have received a messenger as well. Then you have, so all of them were getting the message. Now, you know what happens when there's really interesting or sometimes really shocking news in our day, right? What happens? People start chattering. I mean, whether you're in a group, you start talking about it, or you start talking about it, or you start talking about it, right? Well, you can imagine as the word of this gets out, I mean, it's weird, it's strange, it's shocking. And so, I mean, that becomes the topic of conversation in Israel at that time. But I think it's interesting. You see one generalized reaction there in verse 30. It was so. All that saw it said, there was no such deed done nor seen from the day the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt until this day. They said, this is the awfulest, most horrible, most disgusting thing that we've ever seen since the time we came out of Egypt till now. I mean, what's one difference between Sodom? Now, were they talking about what happened with the men of Gibeah, or were they talking about cutting the woman into pieces as the message? Or maybe both. Okay, but what was the one difference between the men of Sodom and what they did and the men of Gibeah? The biggest difference was what was the nationality, and specifically, what was the god of those people? I mean, the men of Sodom, they were, you know, Canaanites, they were heathens, and God, you know, killed the entire city with fire and brimstone from heaven. But in some ways, it's almost worse with Gibeah, because they were part of Israel, they knew the true God, they had access to God's law and God's worship and all that, and in that sense, they knew better in a greater way than just conscience. They had direct revelation, and yet they chose to pursue the same path of wickedness anyway. Okay? It's all bad. But here you see the end of verse number 30. It says, consider of it, take advice, and speak your mind. That's what we ought to do in every situation, right? Does it always happen in that order? A lot of times it happens the other way, right? Speak your mind, then think about it and go, oops, I should have said something different. But, you know, it was interesting. Consider of it and take advice. Both of those have the idea of to let it sink in, to get good counsel. In other words, to take considered action and not just a hasty response, but it's, hey, let this sink in a minute. This is what's happening. And we have those moments from time to time in our own country. But it was like, let this sink in. This is happening in our own nation, in one of our own cities. And then it says, speak your mind. Did the Levite have the authority to command judgment or military action? No. Okay. Was there a federal government? No. I mean, each individual tribe kind of governed their own affairs. There wasn't a federal government. There wasn't a king or a centralized government at this point. There wasn't what we would think of as a federal judicial system or a Supreme Court. I mean, you had the elders and the priests were to function as judges in many instances, but, you know, he didn't have the authority, but he just said, hey, is this really what we want for our country? Is this what we want to tolerate? Is this the country that we want to live in? Consider it. Take advice. The idea of consider it is to kind of take it to heart and let it sink in. Take advice has the idea of getting counsel or giving good counsel, and then speak your mind. Hey, think about it. And then we need to talk about it. What should we do? Now, we have that, you know, officially every election cycle. We think about it and talk about it. Okay, we hope that the people we vote for can get something changed. But, you know, this has application to every level in our homes, in our church, in our local government. You know, think about it, let it sink in, and then what should we do about it? Taking action on it. Well, he got a response. You see, in chapter 20, beginning in verse number 1, you see the response from Israel. Then all the children of Israel went out, and the congregation was gathered together as one man from Dan even to Beersheba with the land of Gilead unto the Lord in Mizpah. If you remember, I don't know if I can easily show this. Come on. Apparently I can't easily do anything. but if I put the map back up here for a minute, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. If you can read the small print there at the very top, that little box there that says Dan, that was the area that was involved in the whole story in chapter 17 and 18, where Micah had stolen money, and his mom said, that's okay, I was going to make a god out of it anyway. And, you know, then he made a god and he started his own house. Well, then when the tribe of Dan, you can see Dan is down here towards the bottom, and the name is highlighted with a box there, just below Benjamin. They were there. They needed more territory because right around Dan, and particularly to the west towards the Great Sea, which is the Mediterranean, that was the main stronghold of the Philistines. So area that had been given to Dan, they hadn't fully conquered and driven out the Philistines. So they were looking for more land. They sent spies to look for more. Well, up in the far north there, they found some. And that's when they were on their way to go conquer that and claim it as their own. That's when they stole Micah's Levite and his gods and all of that. But really, the main part of Dan here in the south kind of lost their identity. It was Dan in the far north there that is being referred to when it talks about from Dan to Beersheba. Beersheba would be in the far south, even below where Simeon is listed here. So when it says here that all Israel from Dan to Beersheba was gathered together, that's a response from one border to the other, the whole breadth and depth of the country was gathered together with the land of Gilead. What's with the land of Gilead mean? That would be the tribes on the other side of Jordan, the ones that got their inheritance first on the other side. Okay, it says, with the land of Gilead, they came together unto the Lord in Mizpah. What does that mean? Unto the Lord, I think, means that, maybe the leadership, maybe the chief priests or whatever, had called them together before the Lord. It was kind of a solemn assembly, that kind of thing. Mizpah, we see that name quite frequently with the prophet Samuel in the book of 1 Samuel. That was one of the places that he regularly stopped on his route of judging the people and service and so forth. So that would be near the area of Benjamin, central Israel, I think. Verse 2. And the chief of all the people, even of the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 footmen that drew the sword. Verse 3. Now the children of Benjamin heard the children of Israel were gone up to Mizpah. Then said the children of Israel, tell us, how was this wickedness? So you have an indication here. We talked about it at the end of chapter 19, 12 pieces, all the coasts of Israel. Seems like all the areas were notified. I'm sure that this same message of let's all get together and discuss this was delivered. But it seems like Benjamin didn't show up to the main hearing, if you want to call it that way. In other words, the accuser showed up, but the defendant did not. So it looks like Benjamin heard about it, but Benjamin didn't actually go to Mizpah. Because in the next statements here, you see that the Levite side is presented, but there's no defense from Benjamin. So it seems like they didn't show up. But here the number is given in verse number 2, 400,000 footmen that drew the sword. Now, verse 2 says the chief of the people presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God. So the leadership were there, the elders, the leaders, the chief rulers and all that, they showed up. And then it lists the army as 400,000 men. Okay, and then at the end of verse 3, it says, basically tell us what happened. Tell us how was this wickedness. Verse 4 through about verse 7, you have the Levite side of the story. The Levite, the husband of the woman that was slain, answered and said, I came into Gibeah that belongeth to Benjamin, I and my concubine, to lodge. The men of Gibeah rose against me and beset the house round about upon me by night and thought to have slain me. And my concubine have they forced that she is dead. And I took my concubine and cut her in pieces and sent her throughout all the country of the inheritance of Israel, for they have committed lewdness and folly in Israel. Behold, your children of Israel, give here your advice and counsel. So this is, if you will, the prosecutor's opening statement, or this is the accuser's side of the story. Is it factual? Yeah, far as it goes. Were there some facts that were conveniently left out? Yeah, like when mom calls you and your brother or sister to the kitchen or the living room or wherever and says, now tell me what happened. I'm going to tell some facts, but I may leave out the ones that aren't necessarily favorable to my side of the story, right? Well, that's what the Levite did. I mean, it was true. He said, I and my concubine went to Gibeah of Benjamin to lodge. The men of Gibeah rose against me and beset the house round about upon me by night and thought to have slain me. Now, maybe he did think that. Okay, maybe he really thought his life was in danger. Obviously, if they'd done the same thing to him that they had done to his, that they ended up doing to his concubine, then yes, his life was in danger. Okay? What, and did they force his concubine? Yes. What part did he leave out? I sacrificed her to save my own neck. That's the part that he left out. Okay? Did he mention his host here at all? No, that's kind of interesting too. He didn't mention the man that took him in. That man wasn't called as a witness or anything. I think what he's saying is, you know, we understand the customs of hospitality. And, you know, I was a stranger lodging there and they threatened my life and they did kill my concubine. Now, the whole deal about, you know, his side of the story and his concubine and all of that is conveniently left out. But, you know, the major point is true. They threatened him, they forced his concubine, and she died as a result of her abuse at their hands. Verse 6, I took my concubine and cut her in pieces and sent her throughout. Now, the end of verse 6, they have committed lewdness and folly. Is that a true statement? Yes, it is. Absolutely. Folly is a synonym for foolishness. Okay? Any sin against God is foolishness. But they've committed lewdness. I mean, yes, that's a very accurate yet polite way of describing the wickedness of their offenses. They've committed lewdness. It was an offense in polite society. It was an offense in impolite society. Just in impolite society, you know, the strongest man basically says, shut up, I'm going to do what I want. But in the context of the city of Israel and the law of God, they absolutely knew better. No question about that. It was clear that this was an offense against a fellow man. This was an offense against God. That really wasn't a matter of debate. Verse 7, behold, you're all children of Israel. Give here your advice and counsel. Now, did it drop up here too? Yeah. All right. We'll blame it on Nate. It's probably not really his fault, but that's okay. He's at the soundboard today, so we'll blame it on him. So it's okay. It happened last week with Brother Minion too, so you're in good company. Now, what he says is, give here your advice and counsel. Now, just from a very, all right, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to do this again. It should get rid of some of those extra things on the screen there. Says, give here your advice and counsel. Would you say that if you thought everybody that was there was against you? Hey, what do y'all think we should do? We think you should shut up and go home. I mean, that's not the response he's expecting, right? He thinks he's got a good case, and he thinks that he's going to get a response in general that's supportive of him. I mean, he's probably got a reasonable expectation of that. If this kind of crowd showed up as a result of the message that he sent out, then yeah, there's probably a lot of people that are offended by what's happened. I just, hey, y'all say, tell me what you think. I mean, he is kind of leaving it wide open. I think he's making an assumption here that they're all bothered about this as well. Verse number 8. All the people arose as one man, saying, we will not, any of us, go to his tent, neither will we turn any of us into his house. But now this shall be the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up by lot against it, and we will take 10 men of 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, and 100 out of 1,000, and 1,000 out of 10,000. In other words, 10%. To fetch victual for the people that they may do when they come to Gibeah of Benjamin according to all the folly that they have wrought in Israel. Now, did they say, we're going to kill them all? No. Did they have to spell it out like that? I don't think so. What was the penalty for adultery and fornication and sodomy and all of that in the law of Moses? It was stoning. It was death penalty. So, I mean, if this accusation is true, they have violated his concubine, then the death penalty would apply. Okay, so I don't think they had to spell it out, but they said, we're going to go do to them according to the folly that they have done. In other words, we're going to let them reap what they have sown. So the response, everybody shows up, they all agree that this shouldn't have happened, and this needs to be dealt with. Okay, sounds good. Verse 11, So all the men of Israel sought counsel of the Lord, saying, what should we do? Is that what you got in your Bible? Some of you are just like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Now read it. Where do you see here in verse 11, 12, or 13 that they sought counsel of the Lord what they should do? You don't. They just went and did what they thought they ought to do. They just took matters into their own hands. That always goes well. Let's just take matters into our own hands. This will be great. That's not going to end well. But they didn't ask counsel of the Lord. They didn't seek God's direction. They just went and took matters in their own hands, and it cost them a good bit, you know, by the time we get down to the end of the story. So verse 11, all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, knit together as one man. Now, I never really thought it was a debate. I mean, it says there's 400,000 men here, and they took 10% of them, it says, to get victuals. So I think that means they assigned some people to collect supplies and materials and stuff, and the rest of them are going to go to battle. I was really surprised to read commentators that, you know, that wanted to say, oh, it was only a portion of them that went instead of the whole thing. And, I mean, it's not the way I read it at all. It says they were going to go up by lot. So, you know, they did end up casting lots. They said who should lead the charge, and Judah was first, and I don't remember who was second. But they did, you know, send kind of one tribe as the point of attack. But I think the whole congregation here that's listed, this whole large army went. Okay, so verse number 11. The men of Israel were gathered against that city, knit together as one man. And the tribes of Israel sent men throughout all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, what wickedness is this that is done among you? Now therefore deliver us the men, the children of Belial, which are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and put away the evil from Israel. Now, that sounds like the right step, doesn't it? They didn't just go and annihilate everybody. They went, they sent messengers to the whole tribe of Benjamin, the affected group, and said, hey, these men of Belial, that term is used in Judges chapter 19. The word Belial at its root means worthless. But it's the idea of people that are up to no good, no benefit, no profit. If you're from the South, you know, we might say they're no account. Okay? But just forget it. We'll leave it off. You can turn that off, Nate. But you know, these sons of Belial, they said, look, we don't know their names, but you know who they are. We want them, you bring them out. I mean, that was the right step to do. All right, you know who was guilty of this offense. You know, you bring them forward, and they should be punished for what they've done. Was that a reasonable request? I think so. I think that was fair. They said, we want the men that committed this offense. They deserve the death penalty for what they've done. And, you know, you bring them out to us. What you see here is that the tribe of Benjamin, they've, to use, again, an old American expression, they circled the wagons, meaning they got in a defensive position and they're defending Gibeah. They're all super defensive, and they said, it's listed here, I didn't read it at the end of verse 13 yet, but you know, about halfway through the verse, but the children of Benjamin would not hearken to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. So if you're taking the outline down, point number 7 is the refusal of Benjamin. Okay, you have the response of Israel. They got together, they heard the case, they said, this shouldn't happen, we're going to go deal with this. They went down and said, give us the individuals. We want the men that were guilty of this. They should be put to death. That was a proper response. Well, then, point number 7, you have the refusal of Benjamin. Benjamin said, no, you're not getting them. Why? Why would they refuse? I mean, these men had taken and raped and molested strangers in their town. And, you know, the one woman had died as a result of her injuries. Do you think this was the first time this had ever happened in Gibeah? No chance. I think they knew that. They knew the reputation of the city, at least. They said, look, these people committed offenses. Someone's dead as a result of their actions. They deserve to answer for their actions. Bring them out. And they're like, no, You can't have them. We're not doing it. Why? It's a good thing today we don't have anybody that chooses a particular party over right and wrong, right? Everybody always does what's right for the country and right based on the law and never just votes in line with their particular political party or interests. It's a good thing that in our country today, nobody tries to line people up based on common interests, whether it's, you know, country of origin, nationality, race, gender, you know, all those kinds of things. You know, we never have people try to, you know, create segments of people like that against the masses, right? Everybody just does what's right. You understand what I'm getting at? There are times even in our day and in our country and in our, you know, everyday life that people are tempted to choose, you know, politics over what's right or party over what's right, or sometimes it's just family over what's right. I mean, that's a real temptation to say, I'm going to choose, you know, I'm going to defend my family. You know, even if they're wrong, they're still family. Isn't that what God said of Eli in 1 Samuel? Ultimately, when God rebuked Eli, he said, you've honored your sons above me. That was the indictment against Eli. You've honored your sons above me. People do that all the time. You put family above everything else. Of course, family is precious, and it should be treated as such. But why would Benjamin refuse? I think there's a lot of this going on, whether that's the tribal aspect, the us against the world, the whole, you know, who are you to tell us how to run our tribe? Remember, the original 12 were brothers, and so these are all cousins. And it's kind of that, who are you to tell me what to do kind of mentality. Doesn't that sound like the theme of the book of Judges? There was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. There wasn't a baseline of submission to the law of God, which there should have been, right? The law of God is our authority, and that is our guideline. That's first and foremost. If they violated the law of God, then they need to answer for that, regardless of whose son or nephew or brother or cousin or whatever they may be. But you have the tribal politics. You have the, who are you to tell me what to do? You have the, you know, us against the world mentality, all of those things. And so they said, no, we're not bringing them out. Maybe another aspect of it was that there was, I mean, there obviously was a toleration. Maybe there was some sympathy towards their type of lifestyle. We're not told that, but I mean, they at least tolerated it. But you understand here, the men of Benjamin made a terrible decision. They said, no, you can't have them. Verse 14, the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together out of the cities unto Gibeah to go out to battle against the children of Israel. Not only did they say no, they said, it's no, and we're going to back that up with our army. So they gathered together, and they were so dead set on their politics and their family relationship above everything else that they said, we'll fight you over this. Wonderful decision. Brilliant. What are they fighting for? They're fighting to defend rapists, thieves, murderers. It's a good thing we don't have that in our courts today. Good thing we don't have politicians that defend criminals and of all shapes and sizes because it fits their political narrative. Good thing, you know, America's better than that. I wish that were true. I mean, you all know I'm speaking tongue in cheek. That stuff goes on a weekly basis in our country too. Just saying, before we, you know, think too high and mighty, hey, we're susceptible to some of the same things. But they were willing to fight with their army, and they are literally going to start a war to defend rapists and murderers. Bad decision. Bad decision. We will pick up there, Lord willing, next time. And as Paul Harvey said, we'll look at the rest of the story. All right, let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for your word. Help us to put obedience to you above everything else. Help us, Lord, to be the salt and light that we ought to be in our communities, in our nation. And Lord, I pray that you'd help us individually and corporately to learn the lessons and not to repeat the mistakes that we see here that you've recorded for us in the history of Israel. Bless our church hour to follow now in Jesus' name.